further, thank you and good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for coming.
Morning.
We were looking forward to have this meeting again, but we wanted to give you a little bit of a break, and we had to prepare some legislative reports for our constituents and just really do a lot of work before we started the hearings back again. So we are delighted to be here, and I think we are going to go around and introduce ourselves before we get into the agenda. In front of you, you have a package that includes a copy of the agenda. And first thing we have is introductions. So if we could go around and introduce ourselves.
I'm Representative Rod Hamilton. I represent District 22B, which is all of Cottonwood County, all of Jackson County, and four townships in Nobles County, which encompasses two communities, one of Worthington and one of Bigelow.
Paul Gardner. I live in Shoreview in 53A. That includes parts of Shoreview, North Oaks, Lino Lakes, Blaine, and all of Lexington and Circle Pine in Anoka and Ramsey counties.
My name is Gloria Contreras Eden. I'm an attorney and I work with immigrants at Centro Legal.
Bruce Corey. I'm Dean of the College of Business at Concordia University in St. Paul and active in the research and data on the economic contributions of immigrants.
Congratulations on being named dean.
Thank you.
Oh, very nice.
My name is Joe Swedberg with Hormel Foods. I'm vice president of legislative affairs for the company.
I'm Steve Waters with New Level Consulting, and I'm filling in today for Pete Sadowski, who is traveling outside the U.S.
Good morning. I'm John Krupart. I'm president of the American Indian Policy Center. I'm an Anishinaabe, Chippewa Indian, born and raised in Wisconsin, mostly here in Minnesota. And our organization does research, education, and training surrounding American Indian issues.
I'm John Keller of the Immigrant Law Center.
Thanks again. As you recall, we sent an email a few weeks ago to ask for your input and your ideas as to how we could proceed with these meetings and what kind of information we need to have in order to move forward with the work that we would like to do through this working group. And I would like to point you to the minutes that we have in the packet. I believe that this captures the conversation we had last time, but I'm going to give you a minute to review it because it's been some time since we did this. So if you could take a look at it so that we could approve the minutes.
John, was it your recollection that I agreed to participate at the policy subcommittee?
I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember either, other than I think it was a nod.
That makes sense.
Yes, it does make sense. Senator, I'd ask that you correct the minutes to reflect that I was asked to participate as part of the policy subcommittee.
Thank you. Ms. Contreras, could you tell me where we have that. We don't have. I see. Do we have
on the back side?
On the back side?
I don't have.
The back side.
There you go. Okay.
I might have expressed interest by simply smiling and nodding.
Okay. So we need to add your name to that group. Anything else?
Senator.
That,
yes. I'm not sure. It may be good to make a reference to it, but in the discussion, we had asked a state demographer to produce some data on specific areas that he agreed to do it. I'm not sure some of that might turn up in the report that we might ultimately do, but maybe we don't want to lose that those questions that we asked that came after his report.
Thank you, Dr. Curry. We will put that note to make sure that we follow up on that as well. Anything else from members that you recall? We will continue to have this conversation. So as we move forward, we probably forgot a few things, but we will, make sure that we go back to those conversations and try to incorporate the ideas and the suggestions you had. So if we don't have any other corrections for the minutes, I need a motion to accept the minutes, and we can move on to the next item.
And, approval of the minutes as amended?
All of those in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 I had to second that. I didn't second it.
No, I'll second it. That's fine.
Thank you so much. All of those in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, say no. The minutes have been approved. Thank you. The next item in the agenda is the review of the working group members' objectives. Again, as you remember, we did ask the group to please submit ideas, recommendations based on the conversation we had to move forward with your suggestions, and this is what we received. You have in front of you a document that is called Working Group Member Objectives. And I believe, was this mailed to everyone? So did people have a chance to see? No. Okay, so you did not have a chance to see. So I'm going to give you a minute to kind of go over that document as well.
Madam Chair, would it make sense to take the objectives and divide them up in the subcommittee members groups, business, cultural heritage, and policy? Would that make, and that way we could streamline as far as we can focus on those objectives and then address them moving forward?
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. My assumption is that we could do that as we determine perhaps, what are part of what I was thinking as I was reading this, and we were trying with the staff to try to put them in categories, is to determine whether or not we can do all of them, should do some of them, kind of prioritize a few, because we do have a very small group. And the people, we have a wonderful group of staff members that could help us, but in general, I believe that you have tremendous commitments between now and January, and I was hoping we can take a look at it and we can determine what could be the priorities or the issues that we could determine as, kind of working categories, and then we can, I think your suggestion would be great to assign to the groups so that we can distribute the work. Yes, Mr. Kumar.
I wasn't here at the last or the first meeting, and I also couldn't open this document on my email. So I didn't take the opportunity to contribute to the objectives.
Absolutely.
But would this list be open today to any additional comments? If that's so, I would just, with respect to the gentleman bringing up the state demographer's input and providing basic information for us to work with, I would ask us to consider looking at trends either a decade back or a couple of decades back in demographic shifts among the populations that we are focusing on. So that would be helpful for not only our purposes, but for any products we may issue from this deliberations.
Thank you, Mr. Poupart. Oh, absolutely. This is not, you know, we probably will try to prioritize today so that we can start working on, you know, some specifics for the group, but by no means is, you know, this is the way it's going to go, and there is not going to be an opportunity later on to, you know, incorporate other ideas.
And one other element, Madam Chairman, if I may, I would like to also ask that it look at geographic areas of Minnesota as well, so where we're increasing, decreasing numbers.
I am going to, if it is okay with the group, I'm going to introduce the next item of the agenda because I think these two go together and it kind of connects to the conversation we're having right now. As we look at these different ideas that came from the group, the staff and I met, and I asked the staff if they could look into a few reports that I have seen in the past, and I'm sure there are many more, but a few came to mind because I have reviewed them, and I asked them to please compile those reports so that we can take a look at those reports. And we didn't copy these for everyone. I'm just going to pass this around so that you can see it. But we have in front of us a binder that we could put for everyone if you think that that would be necessary. There is a very good report that was put together about 2 years ago by the Minneapolis Foundation called Immigration in Minnesota, Discovering Common Ground. It gives you have that one. Very good. We were able to obtain copies of that one. This is a very good compilation. It's a brief report, I think well-written, that you can really take a look at. Mr. Poupart, you have? Yeah, okay. So everybody has a copy of that in their folders. The Minneapolis Foundation invested a lot of resources and energy in putting this report together that I thought it could be useful for review for us so that we can perhaps look into the information that is here and then determine whether or not, you know, we could use some of that information for our purposes. Then I believe in your packet you have the turn of the century report that we were able to obtain too. This is a very, very good historic document. I read it quite some time ago, but it really talks about the experiences of immigrants in the last 100 years in Minnesota. So it really talks more about the experiences of the people who came 100 years ago who were predominantly of German and Irish descent, but it goes into what is happening today and how kind of our lives are so similar and the struggles and how the state struggled to welcome those immigrants. It's a very interesting document. We have a copy of a document called Embracing Immigration that was put together by the Advocates for Human Rights, and it's a very good document. We have only the summary here, but we could obtain a longer copy for you. And then, as you probably recall, those of you who have been involved in these efforts, the Water Foundation put a couple of reports that are pretty extensive about. One is called the New American Collaborative, and it kind of talks about the experiences of immigrants. And then there is another report called Speaking for Themselves, which is a report that they put together out of a survey that they did with many people, and they just kind of captured those stories and put it together. Then there is another very good document called Minnesota Legislative Report Card on Racial Equity, and it really has a very good compilation of the experiences of the immigrant groups that currently live in Minnesota, predominantly Somali, Hmong, and Latino. And then, as you probably can imagine, the International Institute of Minnesota has several documents that are posted in their website that we can take a look at. And I just have that in here, and I will pass it around so that you can take a look at these documents. So part of what I was, John, if you could please pass it around so that you can see that.
Would this be online?
Yes. All of these reports are online. And that's one of the reasons we didn't, yes.
Link this to some books that I know.
Absolutely. Yes, Representative Gardner, one of the reasons we didn't print this is because all of these are online and many more. So what we were hoping that we could do is that we should have a binder just for reference, but then we will email you a link to all of this so that you can take a look at it. So in going back to the work of this group and you, the suggestions that you sent to us and looking at what it's being done and the reports that have been put in place, what I was thinking that we can do is really move into the discussion as to, you know, do we really need to collect more information? It seems that we have a lot of information that we could use, and so it might not be necessary to really look at, you know, putting a new report per se about the different groups. But perhaps looking at, based on your input, what are the top 2-3 priorities for this group, in your view? Mm-hmm. What are some of the practical steps that we could take in this group? I said 2 or 3 because I don't believe that we can do much more than that, that you think will, you know, really have an impact and will address the concerns and the ideas that you provided.
Yeah, I just want to kind of push up on the table a little bit here, the American Indian population. And I don't want to do this in competition with other folks' interests and groups I advocate for. But I know over the years we do this, and the Indian folks kind of are bystanders and don't say too much about it, so I'm kind of the pushy guy. I'll try and push this on the agenda. But in terms of the turn of the century, and then we look at immigrants, American Indians are, I would say, frequently or usually treated within the same attitude of immigrants. And so I was looking at some of the, quickly scanning the stuff, and what it leaves me with is that what we did with the 150th anniversary of Minnesota, for example. Oh, by the way, we had some people here. Well, yeah. It was sort of embarrassing situations developing from that. So I was wondering how we could be mindful of the native population and not necessarily trying to compete with or crowd anybody else out, but just sort of recognize that. So when you talk about boarding schools, and I picture a boarding school, boarding schools are one of the most atrocious things to happen to Indian folks. So the picture of a boarding school, you would see different kind of representation, and on and on. But I just want to push that up and see if we can give that consideration as we try and figure out our priorities.
And as you know, I'm delighted that you're doing that, Mr. Bupart. I think that that's exactly what we need to do. And
that's
as
right.
I was talking and reviewing this, I realized that we really haven't had a good conversation about how to connect that, how to connect, because it is ethnic heritage and New Americans Working Committee. So it is, we totally need to address the issue of how do we connect, you know, the work that we do and how do we connect the issues that involved American Indian populations into this. And I don't think we've done very well in terms of putting that in the context of the work that we need to do in here.
Madam Chair, if I may, I would also, I do some work with some groups that assist with African American communities, and I would have to say that the same applies. You know, many times we have discussions around ethnic heritage and are talking about immigrants, but in fact, there's a rich culture and history of African Americans in this country as well. And so I think we need to include that because the issues affect them equally, and we're often categorized as a group together.
Two sets of comments. But before I want to affirm both what both have said. But first, in terms of resources, I have a website called ethnictrends.info, which has a lot of data, ongoing research on immigrants, Native American communities, minority communities that could be a resource as you look at things. But even Professor Kathy Fennelly at the University of Minnesota has done some research and recently quoted in the paper on the new data that came out on minority population in the cities. Since the last meeting, I've brought out three kind of studies I've done. One is on the people of Mexican origin in Minnesota. I used the data to challenge some of the major stereotypes in Minnesota about that community, but it affects all immigrants. Had an op-ed in the Pioneer Press too on it, and it was put in some other publications. So I'll email a copy of that PDF. It's on my site too. I did one on African immigrants in the nation and in Minnesota, which is becoming another group that's getting attention to, and a third one on the Liberian community in Minnesota. But all of these, the framework I offer is the concept of ethnic capital, that when you look at communities, you look at it in a positive way, and ethnic capital that includes consumer power, consumer capital, entrepreneurial capital, workers, productive capital, fiscal capital, what taxes and stuff they pay, cultural capital, how they bring in and improve the cultural quality of a state, and then the global networks, how they help to build global connections, like the Hormel example I put in my report in the city of Austin. Trade with Mexico at that time was about $12 to $14 million in meat products that went to Mexico. In the tide of that debate, that kind of information shows a connection. So at that level, I want to offer this kind of data, and I'll send you my site and the links to those reports. In the broader sense, I was thinking about the objectives, and we can go two routes. One is we go and try to document the economic contributions and stuff, and that has its own debate that comes up. We have to bring in the costs and so on. But I think what's really the need of the hour here in Minnesota is a framework, a perspective, a policy framework that Minnesota needs to have to be a global competitor in the future. And I think that we are swamped with looking at these myopic issues that inflame people's passions, and in the process we are losing the big picture. The world is a big competitive playground. Who is going to succeed in the future is going to be those nations that have the act together. Put questions of race, gender, all these things are over the table. Let's talk action. Let's talk about how could we become a most competitive quality education. What's the best way to start a business? And so here where our report would come in and say, if you want to be a welcoming place to attract this ethnic cultural capital, these are some policies you have to have in place. These are some frameworks you have to have in place. You have to have, for example, cultural competent policy officials. Simple thing like that. Some of these don't cost any money. Right? They're free. But I think that's where we might set the agenda, because this commission is an important commission. It's on the table. We don't want another report that files in. We want to change the mindset of people in Minnesota. And we say this is what we think Minnesota needs to do. Don't make people scapegoats of political fights.
One of the issues, thank you, Dr. Curry, I think that's precisely what we need to accomplish today, because if we're not able to really put substance to the work that we need to do, we're going to run out of time. I want to go back to Mr. Popart's question, because I think that's a very relevant question, and I I am guilty of trying to try to figure out how do we expand the table so that we really have the voices of the people that have not had a voice at these tables in the past. And it is, to me, that's really something that we need to do, that we need to do more of at the legislature. In this legislation that passed, I'm going to read this to you because that's the struggle I'm trying to kind of put in here. And I need your help, Mr. Poparth, with this. It says, commission is established. The Minnesota Commission on New Americans is established to capitalize upon and develop the strengths of the immigrant community in Minnesota. The commission shall enable state government to more effectively identify the underutilized resources within the immigrant community and to facilitate the full participation of immigrants in social, cultural, and political life in this state. And then it goes to subdivision one, and you had that information from previous meetings. And it describes what the organization it should be, who appoints, and how many members, and all of that. So I think what we were trying to do here is just to make sure that we have the perspectives of individuals from different communities that could really help us move in that direction. So the legislation itself is clear with respect to new Americans. And in that context, I think what we're looking at, and I don't know if I'm misinterpreting the legislation, is really at these groups that have come to this state. And since it's, I don't know how to call it, since like Mr. Poparth is correct, you know, the American Indian here were here before, so it's not its inception or foundation or whatever you want to call it, you know, since we started having no immigrant people come into the state. So what has happened? What has worked? What hasn't worked? How do we make sure that those individuals that are coming or had come in the past have integrated into this community and have become, you know, successful members of this society? I think that is kind of the intent of the legislation, and try to figure out ways of kind of moving forward so that we as government can really put in place a system of support for those families and individuals. Mr. Poparth.
If I could read the legislation, in my mind, it's almost a, from my perspective anyway, at cross purposes. One is to address the ethnic and cultural diversity in Minnesota. And then the next one goes on to say immigrants, specifying immigrants. Now, if we follow that to the letter, I would say that we're focusing on immigrants. And that out of that may come some utility or usefulness for the American Indian communities. So I'm looking at probably American Indians being the first concentric circle, and that the focus on new immigrants is the purpose of the legislation. Now, we can use American Indian experience for a lot of referencing here.
Absolutely.
And maybe on later on in the product, say, including American Indians or something like that. So, you know, I don't want to, you know, get us off track with respect to the legislation, the meaning and intent of the legislation. So I'd be willing to go that way if that's any useful thinking.
Well, Madam Chair and Mr. Poparth, one of your initial statements was about, you know, bringing everybody together. And I think that can be one of the recommendations that we bring back to when we put the recommendations together, as far as including, you know, all the different cultures and stuff like that as well. That's a great recommendation, because we can learn a lot from yourself and historical data that's taken place there as well. When myself and Representative Yaros were talking about this bill initially, I had a couple main objectives myself, a couple things that I was struggling with. And can I share those?
Absolutely.
No?
Absolutely.
A few of the items, and I think Mr. Swedberg can agree with me, was the employer's needs and some employee issues there, and that's one that I'm very passionate on, and that's one of the items that I would like to work on. Some of these other items on the social, I may not be so well or equipped to work on that, but on the employer and employee and the issues that we have there, I would like to focus on that and work on that, because I think I would have a lot to offer there. And that rolls right in to some of the trade relations that was brought up as well. The other issue that I brought up with Representative Yaros, or Chair Yaros, was I had an issue with what I call this three-generation gap, if you will. And I gave an example as far as my family. When my great-grandfather came here from Germany, right, he would be tagged, whatever, and this is what we need to address here also, he would be tagged as illegal when he came here, because he snuck aboard a freight liner and came to the United States. He was caught by the crew on the way over here. Well, he spoke German when he got here. And when my grandfather was a little boy, that was around 1913, when he was a little boy, he spoke German as well. Well, what was taking place was World War I, and who were we fighting? The Germans. They had a very difficult time blending into the community. When my mother was born, and she hates when I say this because it was, she's a little girl, 1944, 1945.
You don't have to give the date.
You know? And she likes to tell everybody she's 40 years old. It's creeping me out. You know? Anyway, when my mother was a little girl, she remembers speaking German as well. And the difficult time that they had, because it was World War II when we were fighting the Germans. And this was the examples that I was bringing up with Chair Yaros, you know. And I said it would be another example that I was given was in my little community that I live in, Mountain Lake. It's a Russian Mennonite community. Very, you know, the churches in the 70s were bringing individuals over from Laos. And you take a look at the families that came over. The first generation had a difficult time with the languages and work and stuff like that. The second generation now are business owners, you know, small business owners in the communities and stuff like that. Well, the third generation, which are basically the age of my children, are homecoming kings and queens and scholars and stars on the sports teams and stuff like that, and are sitting on the couch with my kids playing video games or playing basketball or whatever the case may be. But it was like a three-generation, it took about three generations to really get that to happen. And Representative Yaros, Chair Yaros, was talking about, he was in concentration camps and everything else, and he was given specific examples. And it was, again, how we all have stories like that to share. You know, you were talking about some of the things that you can offer. So Representative Yaros and I were saying, how can we bring that together and more streamline and have connections and stuff like that? And so I want to focus on that. And then the third thing I was really upset with and wanted to focus on, and Mr. Keller has been a great resource here. I have a very good friend, I won't share his name because I guess I don't have his permission to do so. A very good friend, he came over here from Laos. He only lives a few blocks from my house. He came over from Laos. He's a U.S. citizen. His three children are U.S. citizens. His wife, when she came over, it was the immigration, or it was the government's mistake that they made when she came over here. Today, she is being tagged, if you will, as being here, quote-unquote, illegally or undocumented or whatever the case may be, threatened to be sent back home to Laos to no fault of her own. And I'm saying that's a huge issue. You're going to rip a family apart, you know, for a mistake that was made by government, if you will, the process, it's absolutely wrong. And Mr. Keller's been a wonderful resource, like I said, and we're working together on that as well. But just the hardships that the family's going through, it's ridiculous. And the stories go on and on and on. And back to the business sector, if I may, back to the business sector, I represent Worthington, which is a very diverse community, Mm-hmm. And I was talking with both employers and employees down there. And one of the employers down in Worthington said, Rod, we are doing absolutely everything we can we're in this pilot program where we take the information that we receive from the employees, we run it through this pilot program, so it goes through the Department of Homeland Security and Social Security, et cetera. Then they email us back or fax us back saying, yes, we can or cannot hire that employee due to the documentation that we have. They were in trouble initially because they were asking for specific documentation. And by doing that, they had charges brought against them for discrimination and everything else, and were fined up over $1 million, where they settled for like $300,000. Well, then when they agreed to do the pilot program and do everything that the government was asking for, then all of a sudden they have ICE on their door, raiding them, sending people back to quote-unquote home. When I was talking to them, they have lived here for 10 or 15 years, you know. And so I'm saying, how can we address that as well? And that's how the discussion, those are some of the items that went into the discussion. Mm-hmm. And so the individual, if I can just sum it up again, the items that I, Madam Chair, would like to really focus on, if I could, with some of the experts in the room, would be this, the employer needs and the employee issues, whether it's guest worker program or whatever. I would like to be a part of that. If there's a way I can focus and help with sharing the stories and help with incorporating individuals down in my neck of the woods, you know, we have Latinos and we have Hmong community, you know, so that's the main. If I can help incorporate individuals, that'd be the other one. The third item I would like to focus on is when this group, I would like to know what would be the appropriate term that I can use when I'm talking about individuals, whether it's illegal, unauthorized, undocumented. What are people in this group comfortable? So it's not that political rhetoric that you hear, you know, or whatever. How should we be when we're talking about that as a group, trying to build these bridges and stuff? What would be the proper word, right? Because if we don't use, we could end up offending people. And when we want to bring people together, we want to address the issue, but we also want to bring people together. That should be the focus of this group. What's done out there, you know, we can do what we can to influence it. But again, I want to address that as well.
Thank you, Representative feedback? Hamilton. I think this would be great for us to really go around and get some feedback so that everybody gets to respond and participate.
Madam Chair, I would concur with Representative Hamilton and Dr. Corey's position on this. I just jotted down, I think it falls in line with what they're looking at. This is a very complex issue. There are a lot of avenues we can take. There have been a lot of reports, a lot of work done on this, and it's in the news statewide and nationally, internationally every day. I think there are some main areas, though, that fit right in with what they're talking about. I think one is, first, the historical perspective on immigration. I think a lot of people have historical amnesia on immigration. If you go back and you look at the historical perspective on immigration in the United States, there were struggles. We've struggled throughout this. This is not new. This is just a new generation at this point. So it's a good reminder that for people, I think, to understand there have been struggles, and it's a part of our culture, and it's a part of our culture we should embrace, because through the times, I think we've learned from that, but sometimes we fall back into our old habits, and I think we need to remind ourselves of what we're about. I think there is a real need for bringing forward what the demographer has done, Mr. Gillespie, and the shortfall of human capital. From the very basic labor to the educated and specific skill sets that we need. It's scary for us as a business to look at. We have 19,500 employees, about half of them are in Minnesota. It's scary to look 10, 15 years down the road to find employees, not only from in our operations facilities, labor coming in, direct labor, but skilled labor. In different aspects, to find engineers, to find accountants, to find that. We're struggling now. In our Austin plant, we could look anywhere from 40 to 100 people short every day. We just can't find them. And I mentioned this before, our wages and benefits are close to $25 an hour starting. That's with everything else on top of us. We're not paying at the poverty wage level or minimum wage. So I think that's really, I think people really need to look down the road. Where are you going to find your workforce? And I don't mean to send this around business, but at the end of the day, people's livelihoods are dependent on business because they're going to be employed or have a business themselves. And I think that's where it's critical. Then the other thing, a couple others, is sharing of best practices. You know, there are some bad actors out there. This issue down in Iowa has gotten a lot of play. And from what it sounds like, they're bad actors. And they're doing some things wrong. And that's unfortunate. But you don't throw everybody in on those things. There are a lot of us out there that are doing things right. And I think that that's important to bring forward. And a lot of contributions coming out of that. And then finally, I think we need to look at, you know, where can we direct our resources to get change in these issues? And quite frankly, it comes to the federal level. And we sit around and do prescriptive measures at state levels. We operate in 14, 15 different states. We ship product to all 50 states. And as soon as one state does one thing, it can affect us. And, you know, are we better off doing things prescriptively? I know it's a frustration from the state level that things don't happen, and there are things that, you know, you'd like to do. But is it better off, you know, putting that pressure on our federal officials to finally do something? Not likely this year, though they did pass an e-verify in the House just recently at 472 votes. That's basically just redoing our basic pilot system, which is, quite frankly, a broken system without any fixes. So, you know, I think those are some avenues, I think, that fit with Dr. Corey and Representative Hamilton's approach.
Thank you, Mr. Silver. Any other comments, input?
Madam Chairman, I'd like to concur as well with Dr. Corey and also with Mr. Swedberg. I represent small business in Minnesota, but one of the things that I find interesting as a consultant is that the shortfall in human capital is actually one of the things that is driving outsourcing. So one of the decisions that's not just necessarily, not just money that's driving the outsourcing decision. Many companies are looking at, where can I get that human capital? If I'm going to invest in a research center, where am I going to put it? If I cannot get the human capital here, skilled human capital, I'm going to get it someplace. And that may drive the decision to put something in Bangalore, India versus Austin, Minnesota. So I just want to add my voice to that.
Thank you. Let me ask you a question, because for those of us who are not in the business sector, who don't have the perspective of the market and the labor, as you talk, in my brain and what I hear is that in reality what we need to have is a system in place and a community that offers opportunities for people to build the skills so that they can be successful in that community, whatever that is. In this particular context, we're talking about education skills and labor skills and really the capacity to function economically, which we hope that will translate into other, you know, indicators of well-being, meaning a person who is able to access good education, a good job, is able to get good health care, etc. So when we talk about the work that a group like this could do, are we talking about supporting the state of Minnesota on its effort to build a system of support so that all people who live there, particularly new immigrants, can support those new immigrants, those individuals' effort to become successful in terms of work environment and education? Or are we talking about making sure that these people actually, or are we talking about making sure that business is successful and then do whatever we need to do to ensure that you're successful as business individuals, meaning that if we need to train people right now, we need to train. But reality be known, you will bring people from other parts of the world if you need to, or other states, which we don't want, but that's the argument you're making. So my question is, in the framing of it, I want to understand what that means. Is it mean that we want our government to offer those those safety nets and systems of support so that people can get educated, so that they can, you know, work in the industry that we have today in Minnesota? Or do we want to set a frame in which we say, you know, we just have to have business have to be successful in Minnesota, and that requires that new immigrants be educated and perform so that they can work there. Am I making sense of the question? It's a different question.
Well, Madam Chair, I had some thoughts in that regard. You know, as a politician, I'm door knocking, obviously, for the election campaign, and once in a while I run across people who have some kind of choice and negative words to say about people who are different from them, and I have to sometimes grin and bear it, but sometimes we have a decent conversation, and I just listen. But if I were to be someone trying to convince that person that their understanding of immigrants, as well as native populations and other issues, if I was trying to convince them of some policy change without them reacting with some sort of shallow rhetoric, I think is the phrase that was used here, I think we have to understand their frame a little bit, their frame of reference. And that is kind of unusual. I think we're all in another place mostly, but in this room. But the way I think about it is very selfishly, this doesn't have anything to do with the citizenship status or heritage or anything like that, but I'm just very selfishly thinking of whether I'm going to have Social Security and Medicare coverage when I in 2032, when I'm 65, or whenever it is that we decide people are eligible. So I think if you want to convince people who are concerned about their security somehow, they feel like they're competing with people for jobs, resources, housing, services, what have you, I think we have to put it in the frame that it is to their benefit eventually, because we can't find people to who are going to pay into the Social Security and Medicare with the demographic changes we're going to see coming up. So we don't have to sound too altruistic about it. I mean, if you really want to put it right back in the doorstep of the people who fear change or fear the discussion we're having, that it's in their best interest, and we'd have to figure out how to frame the discussion when we come out publicly and say, you know, we're doing this for you. You're not helping other people with special treatment, which is usually the phrases they use. This is for you. And it could be the difference, as you say, of whether we keep some businesses here or they go overseas where there is a larger labor pool. And that's going to be an interesting discussion for us to have to try and frame it that way. But in terms of our overall objectives, I had two other thoughts. It's just I've only been here less than 2 years, but it seems when we have successful efforts that are often bipartisan or are very sweeping changes that help us over the next 5, 10, 20 years, there are very broad coalitions and leadership is usually involved in helping build those coalitions. I know in the transportation bill there was, you know, the speaker in the Chamber of Commerce had worked on things even up to the last minute, and labor was involved. We've had, I got a videotape the other day, all legislators got a videotape from Growth and Justice, which promotes a fairly fiscally more liberal outlook, and the head of the Chamber of Commerce about the dearth of people we'll have graduating from college to fill jobs in the future. That's a kind of coalition that gets people's attention rather than just one interest group saying, this is our issue, another single interest group saying, this is our issue. Those kinds of things stay on the shelf. You just sort of end up picking sides. I think we have an opportunity here to begin that coalition because we do have some pretty diverse viewpoints in this group, representing some of the communities we're talking about, representing some of the employers, representing people who are upset about some of the issues we might be talking about. We've got to figure out how to build that coalition so that when we do come out with recommendations, it's just not yet another single issue thing that people could say, well, that's not fitting within my frame of reference. We have to really broaden the appeal of the work that we're doing. Mm-hmm. And I also think we need to be a little bit more out front. I think we're hearing just this withering drumbeat of talk radio and whatnot on particularly on immigration, where people are just saying, well, it's just a federal issue. You know, what you're talking about isn't really going to help us. I mean, it might make you feel better to pass certain laws, but it's not going to get us anywhere. I think we need to be out in front and not be defensive about things that are happening. I think we need to come up with some out-of-the-box ideas and explain it again in a frame of reference that people who might be opposed can at least understand, even if they're not supportive. And I think if we have some success with a broad coalition and being forward-thinking, instead of just saying we need to pressure the federal government to do something, I think the federal government could copy us if we find some sort of coalition where we could say, well, Minnesota, we didn't solve all the controversial issues, but we started to address this demographic changes. We started to talk about integrating communities and getting people to live together and work together so that people in the House and Senate and Congress could say, well, Minnesota did this. This would be a great thing for us to try in West Virginia or Maine or wherever. Those are some of my thoughts. Broad coalitions, just being out in front and not being defensive about what we're doing so that we have something that can be replicated elsewhere, but also thinking about the frame of reference of the people who we want to convince. And I think if we can do those three things or start to get something do it through the fall and winter, I think we could approach leadership in the House and Senate and say, this is something that I hope you can assist us with as we adjust things. One other other issue I just want to mention, too, that we shouldn't forget about is environmental justice. I know that next year we'll probably be talking about nuclear power again with in a very deep way. That's going to bring up a lot of issues about how one plan in particular got cited where it probably shouldn't have been in Prairie Island, and a lot of people are still upset about that, and that's going to bring up those issues. We have Native American populations that have been dealing with the anglers. You know, I get these newsletters as a legislator about Mille Lacs, and I don't buy into what the guys are saying about treaty rights and so on, but I think we may need to integrate some of those environmental and energy justice issues with at least have a discussion about it anyway, because they're going to come up again, and we could be a source of leadership on that issue.
Thank you. Any comments? One issue that I keep hearing from you and many people in the community is kind of building on success stories, too, and common ground. And it seems that the issue of, you know, really thinking about our state and the future of our state and what we need to really make sure that we're successful as a state is something that really everybody's on board. So that when we think about the business stories, the successes, the you know, the new immigrants who come here and put business and then you know, become successful, those are stories that connect us. The business story, at least from my perspective in the Latino community, there are so many business people in the Latino community who are really started, you know, with nothing and became very successful business people who are so proud now to be, you know, in business in Minnesota and want to tell their story and really share the concerns that all of you have expressed with respect to, you know, are we going to be able to hire the people that we need in the future? So I think that's a very powerful thing. So if we were to say that maybe we could start with figuring out the work of these committee to look at kind of the business perspective, the contribution, the needs, you know, all of the aspects that you have identified as perhaps one element that we could explore and perhaps have some hearings around the state to really have input from different companies that are working here, different communities where we have, you know, successful businesses and issues that people are struggling with and suggestions as to, you know, what do the business community, the community in general, want to do in order to explore solutions to challenges, problems. Is that something that you envision? I would like to have your input as to what are the practical steps if we move in this direction of looking at putting together a plan. Do we need to travel? Do we need to invite more people from different areas in the industry to come and testify? I want to hear some feedback as to, in practical terms, how do you envision this? What do we do in terms of taking steps?
I think those are some of the, Madam Chair, I think some of those are what would follow what we would establish as toward what are, you know, you talked about the objectives, but the goal of what we're doing. We're trying to resolve some of that ignorance. We're trying to resolve some bad information. We're looking at sources of antagonistic folks. And what I was thinking about as a collective here is how can we set a standard that is higher than that? In other words, what is our mission here? Our mission in whatever we produce, what would be the purpose of that product? In my mind, it looks toward a doctrine of fairness. Fairness to all of Minnesota, including those who are on the outer rim and the fringe groups that you mentioned. But you know, it's hard to come down from your higher intellect to engage in something that's counterproductive. I think it just doesn't work. You know, everybody gets splintered by doing that. So what we're trying to have to do is stay in the middle of the road here, not out of the ditches. And I would hope that maybe that's what we can establish here, is some doctrine of fairness. And when we come out, we talk about the goodness to Minnesota. And out of that is going to come that other discussion. And then we'll talk about strategies and tactics toward working toward whatever that is. Because what we come out with, I would hope, would be a statement that can be made saying that this commission believes this, this, and this. So it elevates the discussion and the dialogue rather than is baited by somebody with a provocative statement. Stay up and keep it sensible, keep it reasonable, keep it built from the experiences around the table here that folks at this commission have contributed to, so that there is a reasonable, sensible, adequate response to some of the provocations that have driven this discussion in Minnesota and in the country. You know, there hasn't really been a collective that responds to these provocations. I look at the newspaper the other day of the unfortunate accident in southwestern Minnesota, in the headline, big headline, illegal immigrant driver. You know, and to me, that was bad. You know, it just took pics on somebody that didn't have a way to respond to it. So anyway, that's kind of what we're faced with. I was hoping we could set a higher standard out of our work.
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Kerry.
Just responding from some of the discussion that people have shared, if I were to visualize a report that came out, the first one would be learning from the past. And in a very integral way, the experience of Native communities, the earlier groups, earlier waves of immigrants, minority communities, this could be given commission to the Immigration History Center. It's people who are qualified to do that research, and we don't have the ability and the thing to do that. But there are what we need to hit right on in whatever we do. There are two deep anxieties in American society today in Minnesota. There's an economic anxiety about the fear of loss of jobs, and there's a cultural anxiety, the loss of cultural. And we've got to address that head on. How do we move from economic anxiety to economic self-confidence? How do we move from cultural anxiety to cultural self-confidence? Mm-hmm. Mahatma Gandhi said, I let the winds of all cultures blow into my room, I'll not be swept by any. Those are American strengths, the ability to take every culture, move forward, the pragmatic business mind, the entrepreneurial spirit, they're all American qualities that I'm afraid are being lost in this anxiety. So we should take it head on in that framework I suggested, a framework of looking at of policies, of programs that we can suggest that states can offer that could address these levels of anxiety. And we can go to these specific areas that we identified here, these working policy groups, that will have specific recommendation, what could be done in this area, what could be done. That way, I think, as you said, we have to offer, if we don't do it, as Representative Paul says, we have enough of assets here to offer that. And I think that's our challenge and our charge.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, I think I agree with that also. And also going back to Representative Gardner, I think he had a good point. I brought up the issue of, you know, where do you put your resources for immigration, the reform issues, and that's at the federal level. But that's probably not an area that we need to be delving in. There's enough, I think most people realize that. If we can set some best practices that Minnesota can do, to set an example, as you mentioned, I think that is probably more appropriate with it. And you mentioned earlier about your question, is it a public or private? I think it's really a good combination of public-private collaboration. Because we neither one of those can do it on their own. I think it's going to have to be a public-private. And there's some great examples in Senator Gimsey's district of Wilmer, Minnesota. They have you can either this thing is not going away, and these people, the different ethnic cultures that have come in and so on, it's not going to go away. These are changing the face of Minnesota. And it's how do we deal with it? So you either embrace it, or you fight it, and know that fighting it has not been a good thing. So I think it's just a matter of ultimately reframing the issue here and repositioning this whole thing is a Minnesota opportunity. We're not talking about the different ethnic groups. We're talking about Minnesotans here, and what can we do as Minnesotans to bring us together? And I think it is really a repositioning of this issue.
Yes, Senator.
I'd like to comment on some of the comments that were made around the table. My vision of this was that of this committee and what our goals were was going to be to enhance the immigrant contributions within our state, and moving toward those goals. I think our working group on jobs and the business community can play a key role in doing that. Certainly hearings around the state where we go and hear about success stories, document those success stories, and then find ways through public resources, which we have the opportunity to solicit, and through private entities, which we can also work with, to send that message out there about the successes that we're seeing in my community, in Worthington, all over in Austin. There are huge and wonderful successes on the part of the immigrant community that will help and to soften the view of some of the groups that Representative Gardner was talking about. That seems to me to be a very important mission of this group, is to soften, if you will, the rhetoric and the view, moving and being able to move the debate forward through that type of an effort, rather than taking on hard legislative issues and trying to resolve those by through this committee. I've stated that before, but I don't think that that's an appropriate direction that we should go. We're going to have those debates on the House floor and on the Senate floor. There are going to be bills coming forward that will cause us to debate those issues, cause enough of a ruckus, if you will, within the media and within this, in St. Paul here, that what I think we need to do is to find ways to highlight the wonderful contributions of the immigrant community and really focus on how can we partner with all groups, the immigrant community, private sector, the public sector, and get that message out there and soften the view. That's what I would like to see happen, and then the direction that I would like to move in.
Very good. Well, let me see if I could capture this. I want to make sure that I have taken that we have the notes that we need to move. So what I hear is really a framing that we need to adopt in terms of moving from this economic and cultural anxiety into economic self-confidence, so that we can look at best practices, examples, how do we enhance, you know, kind of the, how do we look at contributions of new immigrants, figuring out the piece of public and private collaboration, you know, what can the public do, public sector, what can the private sector do, what are they currently doing that works, mm-hmm. so that we can expand what works and eliminate what doesn't. Reframing the issue, moving from this issue of, from this framing of deficit into opportunities and what the state can offer and what we as legislators can do in order to promote legislation that enhances opportunities. And then starting this whole effort with a frame that really includes a letter from the past, so that we build on the contributions and the stories of the American Indian community, so that, you know, there is no just new Americans, but what we have, what the state offers, what we need to acknowledge as our history, so that we will work, perhaps, you know, in logistical terms, perhaps building kind of a, if we have hearings throughout the state, we will meet in three places, try to figure out who are the public and private sectors that need to be there, bring the ideas, and have hearings throughout the state to look at that, and we'll work on that. And then looking at perhaps the business committee to help us frame that and put it together, while the Cultural Heritage Committee and the Policy Committee will work on identifying policies and other issues to bring communities together.
Can I comment on that, Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Hamilton.
My thinking this through on the policy subcommittee, I think it would be beneficial for that committee to wait until the business subcommittee and the cultural heritage subcommittee has had time to address the concerns and issues, and then we could form policy after that. Doesn't that make sense to everybody, to the group? Yes? No?
Well,
once we figure out what the needs are, mm-hmm. then we can start working towards policy.
Sure. Yeah. I do have a question, though, which is just a practical.
Ms. Gutierrez.
Yes. Please, Madam Chair. Thank you. I'm curious about whether the – I just – somewhere I read that the commission exists until June 30th of 2009. Is there any sentiment, or is it your sense that that will be extended – beyond June 30th. So the timeline that we have here is very short now. And practically speaking, maybe one meeting may occur or two meetings may occur. But before the policy committee is ever going to meet, it'll be past June 30th, 2009. And so
I think it's January 1st, 2009.
January.
Is it January?
Chairman Letter.
The subdivision. I see. This January 1st. All right, so we're even on a shorter
time
scale. So realistically, first, my question is there a sense that that the legislature will reconsider continuing the Ethnic Heritage and New American Working Group? It would be my recommendation as a member of this group that be considered by the legislature, and that be part of your recommendations. And the second piece is I certainly agree with all the pieces here that everyone has added. Most importantly, I do believe that the coalition building and the relationships with private groups that are already out there and ready to direct some resources to this effort are in preparation. And so I think I would personally volunteer to bring that back to the group when we meet again, and to explore where those coalitions are happening, because I think even if it is extended beyond January 30th, and if it's not, I think it's going to be important that these folks, at least who are here, remain in that conversation, either through a collaboration or coordination of other groups, because a lot of it is going to require not just public dollars and public resources, but also private dollars and private resources. And I know that a lot of businesses, especially those that are being targeted and being that all cast as doing something wrong, are also interested in directing resources towards an effort.
Thank you so much, Ms. Contreras. My sense of it, and it's impossible, I guess, for the four of us to really predict what it will happen during this session, is that if we have a preliminary report with recommendations and the four of us, you know, work collaboratively to move it forward for perhaps a reappointing of the group to work on implementation. I don't know. Maybe the language will be a little different because at that point we will have a report. I'm pretty sure that that is going to be okay. I don't see, we really haven't been able to do the work that the legislature envisioned for this group. So we're beginning, and I have a hard time thinking that the legislature will not approve an extension so that we can continue the work. So I do think that this is, especially if we move forward with trying to put something together that has bipartisan support, something that we can show to our Senate members and our House members that, indeed this has support from a broader perspective. So I think that that could happen. It has to happen because if not, this is a waste of our time to put all of these together just really to put it on a shelf. Dr. Curry.
You haven't heard from him, so I'll speak
yes,
after him.
Yeah. Please, just, Mr. Keller.
Thank you. A couple things. Time is, of course, moving in the life of the committee. I just was told that it may, in fact, be June 30th, 2009. There's a discrepancy in the two documents we have, and I think we're confident now that it's June 30th, 2009 in terms of the expiration. So it would give us, a few more months than we thought,
yeah,
if that's indeed true. The other thing that I'd like to point out is being respectful of the folks who've come from the minority councils and their time. They are. I know some of them, and maybe all of them, are here. I'm not sure what time we were scheduled to finish today, but I would like to recognize that they're here, and if we've invited them to hear from them, let them get on with their day if they need to, and we're going to continue. So we don't have to invite them to come back again. And I have other comments, but I'll reserve them.
Thank you.
In the interest of time.
Mr. Keller, really the reason for the invitation to the councils is an ongoing invitation, if that's okay to the group. The reason being that the councils do a lot of work related to this particular effort. They have, in my view, or at least in the past when I've requested information from the councils, they have been very, really, very instrumental in terms of education and really sharing. They travel a lot. They meet with people from throughout the state. And my hope is that they are involved in the work that we do in the future because we can tap into those resources and that knowledge that exists there, particularly with the Chicano Latino Affairs Council. I think they are doing a tremendous amount of work to really collect, data, information, and sometimes it's pretty complicated to really get current data, and they really devote a lot of resources to collect information, and I would like them to be here just in case we need that information. They are here, so if the group is okay with that, I would like to ask
several
them to
groups
introduce themselves. If you could join us at the table and just introduce yourself so that there are representatives from the councils here. Rogelio is here. Come on, Rogelio, please join us. All of you are here. I couldn't see behind the column who was here.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much. Thank you for coming. I really appreciate that that you came because I think all of us really need to know who you are. So if the group is okay, I would like to give them a little time to introduce themselves and just tell us a little bit about what your council does.
This is a time where I like to say, can we go in alphabetical order? American Indian, Black, and Chicano. But I'll start. Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, my name is Rogelio Munoz. I'm the Executive Director of the Chicano Latino Affairs Council. We are the second oldest council in the state of Minnesota, established in 1978. This year we're celebrating our 30th anniversary. Our work primarily deals with advising the governor and the Minnesota legislature on issues that impact Minnesota's Latino community. Minnesota's Latino community has grown exponentially in the past 10 to 20 years. Currently, we have a population of about 205,000 Latino residents in the state of Minnesota.
Thank you.
My name is Lester Collins, and I'm the director of the State Council on Black Minnesotans. Our charges are all, I think, very similar. One thing I will mention, that the council was created in 1980. That is the Council on Black Minnesotans. And I've been with the agency almost 20-something years. One of the things that I did, which is not unusual for any of us, is to have two or three meetings that I need to be at. A meeting is going on. And there are two gentlemen in the audience. One is Mr. Tyretta, who was originally from St. Cloud, who was also the chair of the Council on Black Minnesotans for several years in the past. And then Lewis, and I don't want to mess up your last name.
Alamayo.
I think, and I invited them because I was supposed to be meeting with them now, but the work that he does in particular is this work. Mm-hmm. And you know, I know that by looking at his resume. I've never met him, at least I can't recall, and we're going to meet and kind of discuss that. So by coincidence, this meeting or your invitation and my meeting with him, I think I'm hoping that some discussion outside of this meeting will occur. And, of course, Dr. Corey, you know, I've worked with him, and I'm going to limit it to that, but I certainly have some thoughts about this group's work, and particularly some of what the private colleges, particularly Minscu, I think has done as it relates to the workforce projections and those kinds of things, which I think are real important for this group to consider. So,
thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Anna Marie Hill, and I am the Executive Director of the Indian Affairs Council for the state of Minnesota. And the Indian Affairs Council is the oldest council in the entire nation. It was the first one established, and it was established in 1963. We manage a budget, a general fund budget, of approximately $485,000 a year. And it is the largest of the councils in the state of Minnesota. And we also have a very large board. We have about 28 members who sit on our board. They consist of legislators, a member from the governor's office, many commissioners, and of course, most importantly, our tribal governments and their designees are on the board. We do have voting authority, but the only voting members on our board remain the 11 tribal chairs. That's who governs the work that I do and who actually hires me. So we are appointed differently in the state. We address every issue imaginable, and we still stand as the official liaison between the state and tribes in the state of Minnesota. So basically, we're a resource for all of you to come to should you not know where else to go, which is a very common thing. We'll tell you where to go. How does that work? We like to laugh, too. we just finished a quarterly board meeting, and we discuss everything. We discuss things from economic development fund, what to do with that in the state of Minnesota, from the problem with language immersion. As you may all know, we do not have a budding language. We have a language that has basically been extinguished. It's a unique problem, and it's a unique situation. So when we discuss immersion or language, we talk about revitalization. We talk about a dying language, one that was basically snuffed out and that we have to revitalize again. It's a big charge, but I expect that we'll go through with it, especially if I have something to say about that. So we are the official liaison, and we're here at all times to available to you.
Thanks. Thank you, Ms. Hill. Mr. Banks.
Oh. I'm Roger Banks. We've got a double count here. I'm with the Council on Black Minnesotans. I do their research and policy analyst work. And I'd be remiss, however, if I didn't mention at this point in time that to me it's really critical that African and African Americans have some form of representation in this body in a formal sense. There are a whole range of African organizations around in the Twin Cities that have been actively engaged in trying to resolve some of the issues affecting them. And so it's just my suggestion that you might consider broadening the scope of your representation so that they, as it was said in that document that was referred to earlier today, let them speak for themselves. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Banks. And I would like to put a note for the tasks that we have to do, because I was thinking that we definitely need to look at what do we do in order to expand the representation so that we may have a representative in this group. And I don't know really at this point how do we do that. We need to connect with our respective appointing authorities to find out how do we work with that. On the other hand, I want to make sure that you know that regardless of the structure that is in here, that we will always be inviting you to come, and we will be welcoming your input regardless of the structure of this committee. So we want you to feel absolutely free to send us recommendations, letters, and have a person present here or yourselves at all times and requesting time to talk, because really this group is very open to that. And what we want is to really make sure that we do what works best. What, you know, we want to make sure we have voices, and the more input we have, I think the better off we will be. If the group is not opposed to it, I think that I would like to say again that for us, I think it would be very beneficial to have the council members attending our meetings so that they get to know, you know, kind of what is happening, and they provide input. As you heard, this is the work that they do. We work collaboratively with many projects during the session this year, and I really, really thank you for all the work that you did with Achievement Gap and other areas that we work with together. So I know that you are an incredible resource for us. Any comments or any feedback with respect to that proposal? Dr. Curry.
I want to support the proposal, but refer to a couple of things that that I think we need to do also. But I think that voice that the councils represent, it's a good way. We should find ways to institutionalize that in the way we are doing, because they are connected to a whole groups of people. As we go forward, too, I want to make sure that this work is done, because we'll need this information when we come up with our report. Some of the things that we asked the state demographer, but some of it that DEED produces. DEED has data on occupation projections, but also ways to summarize demand in different occupation, different regions of the state, and we should be able to match that with population growth rates in different in the ethnic communities. To illustrate the case that we are, whether it's a labor argument or a human capital argument. So this background research needs to be ready, so we are not doing it at that time. Mm-hmm. So I could think about something, send an email. We should also, in the policy committee, be talking to the state national state legislative body, the National Governors Association. What have they found out in best policy practices? So, again, we have that body of knowledge mm-hmm. at the policy committee.
So a little bit of best practices research in terms of policy before we dive into recommendations, which is what Representative Hamilton was also suggesting, that we really need to work on kind of the foundation, the pieces that we need to have before we move into presenting recommendations. So that will be part of really collecting that information as we move forward with our plans. Mr. Keller.
Two things. This seems to be completely accurate at this point. The working group is to expire January 1st, 2009. So forget everything else that's been said. That has been checked and double-checked, and I'll stake Peter's reputation on it. So January 1st, 2009 is the alarm clock. The other question I have in terms of councils, Asian Pacific Islander Council, I assume continues to exist.
Yes.
And my hope is that they were invited and were unable to make it and not an oversight. So,
That is the case.
Thank you. And secondly, I mean, practically, knowing everyone's schedules, in my mind, there are some very important next steps and practical steps to make the investment of time here by all of us worthwhile. And they include, in my mind, a few very important things, setting up objectives that can be reached. And I think the date, the question around the date by which this commission expires, now that it's resolved, I was under the impression it was January as well until I saw another document today. That is my first concern and objective, not because I sit on this council, but because I think the opportunities that this council can rise to fill, especially, you know, with this being the second meeting, the vast amount of resources that are here, the state and the folks who don't have voices in the state particularly need that to happen. So the resolution of the date, and frankly, the proposal from my point of view and perhaps others, is that the date be extended, whether it be another year. At this point, my understanding is this is an unfunded commission, and that we would look into and take steps, whether it be through the little bit of staff support that we have, as to the procedures for that to happen, to extend the effective date of the termination of this commission. So number one. And then number two, really, I think we need to create some structured meeting schedules. If, in fact, you know, we are going to finish on January 1st, 2009, how often will we meet, how quickly, and how much time are people able to dedicate? If the persons who are here can't dedicate that time that's required to reach some of the objectives, we need to find those who can, from my humble opinion. And so that really depends on the date. If it is, you know, less than 4 months with an election coming up and holidays, et cetera, it becomes extremely impossible to do more than one or two objectives, in my opinion. I think enough is said. Secondly, I think the other thing that all of us would appreciate not doing is recreating the wheel. One of the suggestions in terms of objectives that I've provided, and I've provided some contact to Sally of the LCC, is to invite other state-based commissions to either send us reports or to provide us with some in-person testimony or suggestions as to best practices as to how those Iowa or Illinois commissions have functioned, what has been their history. These are separate from specific demographic or ethnic council commissions in other states. So Iowa, I was pleased to learn, has existed. The Council on New Iowans has existed since 2000 and was able to attract federal money to fund their initiative, and they have at least four sites, I believe, scattered throughout Iowa with pretty clear objectives as to what they're doing. I think if, in fact, we have some staff assistance, those sorts of roadmaps could be presented to us in terms of recommendations of where we go from others that have, you know, done this before us. I do know from the many different places that I am listening and active that there is a lot of hope, I think, for this commission to do good things and to be an important voice of reason on these issues. So I think there is a definite urgency, I'd say, from all of those places that this place function, that we get a lot of work done and come up with some positive results and really lead in a way that that I think most people here have already expressed, which is to change the debate and to change the objectives from a bipartisan panel that says, these are the problems, we can't deal with this, we can't deal with that, but Minnesota has a stake both economically, culturally, and in terms of moving the state forward in resolving these four things or whatever they are, and then moving forward determined with a budget. I didn't mean to say budget, although maybe it's possible and necessary, but with a clear work plan in terms of what those are. I think part of what we're doing is important because we're giving a voice to all of the objectives, but we really need to find a way to turn that into action. The very other practical questions, then I'll be quiet, are I don't know the parameters of outside of these meetings. Can we get together and meet? Are there open meeting laws that apply to this type of a commission? What are the parameters for ongoing outside of regular meetings? I know we talked about subcommissions, but we don't have a lot of guidance, is my understanding. And if we could get some of that guidance, I think it could help us to create achievable objectives and work plans to reach those objectives. And I have lots of opinions on what those should be, but I think they're pretty consistent with what I've heard. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Keller. As far as I know, if we form the committees today so that we can move on with the tasks, the committees can start meeting on their own. We don't need to have any type of quorum, or we don't have really specific regulations that apply to the subcommittees the way they will apply to this commission. To for these particular meetings, you know, we do have to announce it, post it, and all of that. And but for the subcommittees, I think we could very well talk about that today, set up the time so that we can begin to do the work. And I think that it will be very important that we meet right away. The chairs, Representative Hamilton and I, will meet with the staff to follow up on these specific requests that you made, so that we can work with the staff to put together some of the you know, tasks in place to get the information from Iowa and all the things that we need. So if the group is ready, I think what we could do is set up some times to get the working committees in place. And by then, hopefully, we will have the information that we need. So we will be mailing this out to you, at least what we have, in terms of some of the information that you are requesting before
Madam Chair?
We move forward. Yes, Representative Hamilton.
Mr. Keller, I'd like you to keep going. I mean, you're laying the base, the foundation here, and you have more to add when it comes to the objectives and stuff like that. I think, listen to the testimony, just like you said, we all have similar stories, similar objectives and stuff like that. You're laying a very nice foundation here, and I'd like you to build off of that if you'd keep going. You talked about the meeting structures. Do you have ideas in your head on how? That was number two that you put down. Number one, you had the date extended. And so we could talk about how long do you think we should ask for that extension. The second piece, you talked about the meeting structure. What do you envision that to be, if you would share that with us as well? And then the other parts, you said about the objectives, you know, one or two, and then later on you said maybe up to four. I would like to know what those objectives are, because more than likely it's exactly what everybody else is thinking. So if you would, please, if you'd just continue.
You know, I think it, in terms of planning for everyone's schedules, we could simply, I don't know if we can do it simply, but we need to set a date in advance, and a schedule of dates, of course, in advance, when we will be meeting and for what amount of time.
What do you recommend?
I say, you know, and again, this sort of, I'm trying not to base it only on my life and commitments, but a monthly meeting, perhaps until we get the date resolved. If you go to every other month, then somebody made the observation we're going to meet maybe two more times.
Okay. One moment. Madam Chair, is this okay if I continue? Does anybody have an objective to a monthly meeting?
I have a question. A monthly meeting of this commission or a monthly meeting of the subcommittees?
And again, to respond, thank you. I'm not sure, from my point of view, the way in which Immigrant Law Center runs its business is the board meets every other month and the subcommittees meet on the alternate months. And the subcommittees, of course, are charged with specific things to come back to the larger body with. So that could be, it doesn't really change my life or any of the members' lives, because we'll be in either the large committee or the subcommittee meeting on a monthly basis. So I think the question remains, what Representative Hamilton was asking is a monthly commitment feasible for the people at this table, whether it be in the full committee or a subcommittee? And maybe, you know, maybe the question really is, unresolved at this point, is if in fact we're charged with coming up with a product by January 1st, that changes how we look at the calendar, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So going back to the statement then, to address that one so we can keep moving here, on the meetings in particular, can everybody in this committee afford their time on a monthly basis? Anybody have an objection? Okay, to address that again, then should the subcommittees be meeting every month, reporting back on a bi-monthly, or excuse me, every other month, to the main committee then, like Mr. Keller recommended? Is that okay?
Representative, if I may.
Yes.
Just to clarify your question earlier, mm-hmm. And maybe you can help me answer your question.
Absolutely.
Would the policy committee meeting, this policy subcommittee be on hold until other committees could make recommendations on objectives? And if that were the case, then would my efforts be more lucrative in a business subcommittee meeting or cultural heritage subcommittee? So if you could please answer that question first.
My take on that, and anybody else can interject if they'd like, I would say that we would wait on the policy subcommittee. That's my personal opinion. Your appointment to the business committee, I think, would be very well served, and I would like to be on that committee as well, if I could. And then we can make the recommendation back to the policy committee, or back to the main committee, and probably form the policy committee then around that November time frame is what I'm thinking, to where we could get some very valuable information. Is that okay with everybody? Do you agree with that as well?
I agree, and I think that the subcommittees could not necessarily set an agenda for how often we meet. It may be possible that we be meeting twice a month.
Okay.
I think I would like that to be an issue left for the subcommittees, but that we agree to exchange information.
I agree with that too. Mr. Keller, you okay with that?
That's fine.
Now, on the then with the meeting structure itself, the subcommittees coming off of here, the subcommittee meetings should take place. Those are next. That's logical. Let's set a date right now, if we could, please, to both subcommittees. Is that possible, or is that possible?
Life with me.
All right.
Fridays look better for me than anything because I don't have my calendar with.
But, okay.
Fridays would be.
Okay.
Yeah.
How much time would we need in order to get ready for that first subcommittee? Are we thinking a week, 2 weeks, September?
I think it depends if
you're ready to go. All right.
I think we should meet very soon, within the week or whatever, for that subcommittee, just to set the goal, I mean, where it's going.
Okay, we need ownership in that. And so you have the subcommittees. I'm going to ask that we have one individual be appointed on those subcommittees to take that lead role for the moderator, if you will. Is that okay?
I would be happy to volunteer for the business subcommittee to be moderator on that particular committee.
All right, fantastic. And that's on the business, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Do we have a volunteer on the cultural heritage subcommittee?
I can do that, Representative Hamilton.
Fantastic. Do you want to set the date here now, or would you like to get up with the members of the subcommittee via email and then get feedback from them? How would you like to proceed?
Would we have the assistance of Ms. Kidd?
Yes.
All right. If you could please then direct an email to all the subcommittee members on proposing three possible dates over the next week, if that is when people are recommending to meet, or within the next 2 weeks.
For then the main committee here, we should probably be meeting then. When would you think the subcommittee should first come back to this main committee? When should we be meeting? As we could set that, we need to set that here today as well, don't you think, John?
I would agree.
So we could set out, I would anticipate about a month from now when this whole group should get together. We have, okay. So if we could get that in the minutes that this entire group will be meeting, and if we could put it in the minutes, you know, it would be the middle of September, and we will send out an invite and everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So are you okay then, John, with as far as the meetings? The objectives, we have a list of objectives that was sent out, or everybody sent them in. Would it be beneficial for the subcommittee to read through those objectives at the first meeting, pick out the ones that are applicable, and then if there's any additional, the subcommittee could then determine what those are at that first meeting, could they not?
Sure.
Yeah? Does that make sense for everybody?
Representative Hamill, I agree with that. I would go along with John's suggestion, though, of keeping it to a very tight list of absolutely no more than four. I would rather keep it smaller than that in order for this group to really concentrate when we need to get that.
Okay, so
I
then
suggest that to the subcommittee.
All right, very good. So then are we okay with the subcommittees determining what those two maximum of four, we're not going to go over four, I think that's the consensus of the group. Is it then the subcommittee that will determine what those items are as far as those objectives?
And bring those
or are we
going to
do that
here
today?
Representative, I yes, would suggest Joe, that the subcommittees, each of them take a cut at those and then
okay,
bring them back. I would suspect they're going to be very similar, but then we can bring them. And once the subcommittee has those, send them out, both out to the whole group, so when we come back for the full committee meeting, then everybody's formed an opinion at that point, then we can maybe blend them. My guess is they're going to be quite similar.
Okay. I would have a recommendation for the subcommittees then, is we have very talented people that came up here that were invited and spoke. We as subcommittees should be in contact with them as well, because they may have some specific direction for us or inputs as well. Right? Okay with that. Okay, so that is the meeting schedule and the objectives. The date to be extended, coming back to that, Mr. Keller, if you would want to give us your thoughts on how long, what you would ask for, because then we could go back to others as well and we can make the request, myself and Senator.
You know, I don't have any particular expertise in knowing how long, how much longer we would need. My guess is there, since there really is not a fiscal burden, that the economics of continuing it shouldn't be at issue. I think we don't want to extend it to the point where we feel like we don't have a deadline. I do believe that there are other pressures that do make this an urgent task. I think January 1st, of course, is unworkable, at least at the pace that we've gotten off to. My suggestion would be that, and I think there's almost another, if my suggestion would be, and I'd be happy to take this part on, since the policy subcommittee isn't necessarily meeting, I think there's almost a governance as well as best practices for this group, a bit of work that I could bring back to this,
okay,
in coordination with Ms. Kidd and the folks from Iowa and Illinois. And one of those suggestions could be, you know, how did to help influence this, how did they get started, how did they determine how they would proceed and under what time frames, and whether or not there's the ability to match objectives to federal funding for this sort of a thing. So I'd be happy to take that on in the interim before the next meeting. My suggestion would be that that we're able to at least extend this group another 6 months with the ability, in addition to the extension of the commission, of the working group, to add members per our council suggestions today that fill out the rest of the groups that aren't represented, particularly the Black and African voice.
Okay. Okay.
So that's really two governance issues, and I'm happy to look at working on those as well as a recommendation, maybe working with LCC as to the best way to go about extending
okay,
and bringing the information, whether in person or through documents of the other groups.
Okay. That's a decision. Did you get that in the minutes there? And in the minutes as well, as far as you had a question about the parameters, the open meeting laws, the guidance, if you will, that is something that myself and the Senator, we can mm-hmm, provide all that, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And then the extension will work together with you on that as well. Okay?
Very good.
One of the issues, Representative Hamilton, yeah, that I think we need to think about the reason for why this deadline is in place is because we need to submit recommendations in January. If you extend it 6 months and you don't submit recommendations, the session is over.
Right.
That puts you into the following year.
That's right.
So one thing that we could think about is perhaps the possibility of coming up with some recommendations. They don't have to be all the recommendations are, you know. But I do think that we have an opportunity to really look into, perhaps do an assessment in November, end of November, find out where we're at, if we are at a place where we can put something together to submit as a recommendation. Because that is the reason that deadline is in there.
That's right.
So that we can, you know, start looking at legislative proposals in January and then authoring legislation or whatever it is that we would like to do. If we're not ready, we're not ready, and we will do it the following year. That could, you know, we could determine that probably by the end of November, that we're just simply not ready for a recommendation. But if we ask for an extension, then we will continue to work probably until June, and that puts us into end of session and no recommendations for this particular session.
Right. Absolutely right. And that's where, Madam Chair, I believe if once we come together back in that November meeting, we should have, or we will have, I mean, that's our goal, to have the pertinent information to start building those policy recommendations in those November and then subsequently December meetings.
Madam Chair, I just was going to suggest we also keep in the back of our heads that the next year is a budget year, and state agencies are putting together requests. It will be very soon, and our fates will be decided in early November, and the budget forecast will come out also. So whatever may come out of here may be decided by the legislature and its priorities, not necessarily the governor's office and its budget recommendations. But, you know, I'm even thinking on the ethnic heritage area about how we interact with the various minority councils and their budget requests, which would come through the Heritage Finance Committee, which I'm vice chair of, the Historical Society, and a bunch of other things. So we ought to keep some of those ideas in our minds and think of what agency box some of those things are going to fit in if they come up during the budget discussion. So.
Absolutely. And knowing some of you, I don't know, but I have had a good sense of how you function through these meetings. I have a sense that in two or three meetings of the subcommittees, we're going to have some pretty interesting language that we could really use to generate discussion in terms of proposals. So with respect to Representative Hamilton's requests, are we clear, staff, are we clear about dates and then proposals? The committees will meet, kind of determine, you know, what they need to do, submit those recommendations so that they will come to the general group, to this commission, and then here together we will determine what are the next steps. Mm-hmm. And we will be proposing dates so that that's in place. And any information that you have that you would like to share with us so that the staff can really start working on putting together the information that you need for the subcommittees, we really would appreciate it if you send it to us as soon as you possibly can. That will save us a lot of time. Any ideas, recommendations, you know, we can do a lot of work through email. Anything else? We have about 2 minutes to end this meeting.
One suggestion in terms of, I think it's, it will function best if the subcommittees within the folks on those subcommittees determine whatever dates are workable. My suggestion would be that when the dates are confirmed for the meeting of the subcommittees, that they be communicated to the entire group. And the further suggestion is if somebody wanted to participate who's not in one of those groups, that would also be possible as sort of ex officio members of the subcommittees. Not that anybody's looking for extra meetings, but as we get moving forward, that may be something that people are interested in. And the hope then would be that, just to be clear, that the meeting schedule for both subcommittees as well as the full body would be set initially at least through January, through December 31st.
Right.
Madam Chair, one other thing. If the examples from Iowa and Illinois could be sent out to each member as quickly as possible, it would be nice to have those before the first subcommittee meetings.
Absolutely.
We may not have to rebuild the ship.
Yeah, absolutely, Mr. Silver. And anything that you think that we really need to review, your ideas, your thoughts as to how these committees should be structured, information that you think, because that would really facilitate, you know, the discussion, and we can really complete the work at the subcommittee level and here. So we will really appreciate that. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just so the record reflects that Mr. Keller will be sending out that information that you requested, okay, from Iowa, right?
Yes. The pressure's on.
Thank you. If we have no other business, the next meeting will be chaired by Representative Hamilton. So we will coordinate through his office, and obviously we'll be working together. But just so you know, and again, the staff will communicate with us. Any information, any concerns, comments you have, please send it to us as soon as possible, Mr. Kelly.
I'm sorry. The questions that I've had as well, and this partly revolved around the Iowa-Illinois, is number one, Madam Chair, when you talk about the staff, you're referring to Ms. Kidd?
Yes.
Or not your office staffs, I assume.
Rachel will be happy to collaborate, and if we need her, she will be available to work with this group. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, my office has the time right now to be involved in this effort.
So in terms of smooth processing of information that you want members to get to staff, it should go to Ms. Kidd and to
both.
Rachel?
Yes, that would be good.
Thank you.
That the two of them can coordinate. That
the
would
other
be good.
Question I had is particularly regarding Iowa and Illinois. I can't remember if it was a question they asked or that I anticipated them asking, is if we were to invite them to come, travel costs and costs for anything that the commission would want to take on, whether it be a hearing in Austin or inviting experts to help us do this better. I don't know the parameters of that. I think there's some mention of the ability to pay costs or incidentals for the movement of this commission.
Well, and John, just to let you know that the first executive director of Iowa's commission is actually here in Minnesota. So I'll forward that information to you, and you can talk to her.
Great.
So we have those people here, or at least some of those people here.
Very nice.
Wow. Why don't we do a little investigation of that? I understand that we do have very limited budget, but we do have a budget. So I will find out, you know, what kind of money we have for this. Because another thing that people wanted to do was to have this hearing outside of the cities, and I don't know if that is something. I think it's a good idea for us to really go to Worthington and to other areas where we have you know, many people who are interested who are just not able to travel over here. So maybe if we could figure out, you know, logistics for transportation, maybe we should have those meetings. Yes, in Wilmer. That would be terrific. In Worthington, perhaps. Mm-hmm. But we will determine that.
Maybe that's the policy subcommittee's role, is to get hearing from a wide range of people. What is there? I mean, that could be where that policy committee can gather that information. But these other subcommittees have a very focused look at particular things.
Okay. Very good. So we have a lot of work to do, lots of tasks to accomplish. Please stay in communication with the group. Thank you, and this meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
Question I have for you.
Okay.